Ways and Means Subcommittee on Capital Construction, and we're going to open a work session.
Your funding report.
Funding report?
Refunding.
Refunding report. Thank you so much. I would ask that Jean Gabriel and Patrick Heath come forward, please. Go ahead, Jean.
Co-Chair Gerard, Co-Chair Holby, members of the committee, I'm Jean Gabriel, Capital Finance and Planning Manager with the Department of Administrative Services. Together with the Treasurer's Office, we periodically look for opportunities to refinance outstanding debt in order to achieve debt service savings. As part of our recent April 5, 2017 lottery bond sale, we used a portion of the proceeds to pay off higher interest bonds. This refinancing resulted in lottery fund debt service savings of $527,814 for the 17-19 biennium, and the total savings of approximately $6.1 million over the life of the bonds. The savings by agency is noted in the letter that we submitted. I would be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for Ms. Gabriel? Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you. Sorry, this is a totally random question. Thank you for your report. So if I look at the 2020 to 2031 debt service savings, and this might be something you want to answer offline. We're spending a lot of time talking about cost containment, and I have a 2025 time frame on my mind. Is there anything we could, obviously, I think we do a great job of trying to refinance, and we've been taking advantage of lower interest rates and doing a bang-up job doing it. Is there anything else we could be doing to grow that debt service savings that we're not, that would be? Is there anything different we could be doing? Maybe not, but you know, trying to make sure that we're, you know, our out-year savings increase by doing the work we're doing now around refinancing debt. Is there anything else we could be doing, or advice for us on cost containment as it relates to this? And again, you can take it offline if you want to think about it.
Co-Chair Gerard, Co-Chair Holby, Representative Kotek, I can't think of anything right offhand that we could be doing other than monitoring the market. We have in the last several years seen lower interest rates through the market and have been able to take advantage of that and save really millions of dollars. I know the Treasurer's Office tracks it at the statewide level, and it has been a significant reduction in debt service because of those refundings.
And I would agree with that. You've been doing a great job. So everybody has, in the Treasurer's team as well. So thank you.
Senator Davila.
Yeah. We actually have done an excellent job in refunding the COPs that we issued largely to build our correctional system. I think the one thing we would not want to do is to go back and issue COPs for future indebtedness unless we absolutely had to, because we would be issuing them probably at not as good a terms as we would have for our GO bond and lottery bonding authority. So, I just want.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, can we get the Patrick Heath, please?
Co-Chair Gerard, Co-Chair Holby, members of the committee, I'm Patrick Heath with the Chief Financial Office, and we recommend acknowledging receipt of the report.
All right. Mr. Co-Chair.
Co-Chair Gerard, I move to acknowledge the receipt of the report.
You've heard the motion to receive the or acknowledge the receipt of the report. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So moved.
Mr. Chairman?
We need a carrier.
Yeah, this only goes to the full committee, and I don't know if Chair Holby has carried a bill before the full committee yet.
But I kind of wanted a more technical one.
Knew I should have took the gavel, didn't you?
Okay, well, let's.
Do you have a tradition of hazing members for the first carry on?
Absolutely.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
It's not called a hazing.
No.
Especially when he sits down there. But, you know, today he was arguing that he had to have his desk raised. So.
Oh, was he on the kiddie table?
Oh, he is on the kiddie table. So,
well,
sure.
Just to be clear, that was a joint effort by Senator DeBoer and myself.
Yeah, okay. So, Representative Holby will carry. So, I'm going to close that work session and open an information meeting with the Treasurer's Office presentation, please.
boats by myself. No boat for me. Story of my life. Last night, I was pushing a major water all the way up to here. The water was a very dangerous situation.
Long in the tooth.
Hello.
Could have readily gone.
There we go.
Shall I begin?
Go ahead, please.
For the record, my name is Laura Lockwood McCall. I'm the director of the Debt Management Division of the Oregon State Treasury. And I am doing a mini abbreviated version of the State Debt Policy Advisory Report presentation that we did a few months ago for your committee. So Senator Devlin is a member of that committee, along with Representative Barnhart, the state treasurer. Our public member is Tim Dewey, an economist at the State University of Oregon, and the director of DAS, Katie Koba. So this year's report, this just briefly gives you, this is an annual report required under statute, and it's to help give you some estimates and some guidelines on debt capacity, and to highlight any emerging areas of debt that we think are of concern that the legislature may want to take up. So for those, I think most of you may have heard this, but if not, there are four major categories of debt that we look at, our general obligation bonds. Those are all designed through the state constitution. We have a prohibition on borrowing more than $50,000 in debt, except for transportation, or if there's a carve out. So you hear about Article 11F bonds or G or H, and those are all separate voter-approved carve-outs from that debt limitation. They each have their own separate debt limitation, which is a large number, and so we use our debt capacity report to come up with more of a fiscally prudent number rather than the maximum debt limits in our Constitution. Revenue bonds don't have the full faith and credit pledge that our general obligations have. They're a revenue stream separate and unique that we pledge to bondholders to pay that debt, including lottery revenue bonds, we do housing revenue bonds, we do highway revenue bonds, of those types of things. They're still considered state debt, though, if there are revenue streams that are available to us as a state to appropriate. We have troop appropriation credits, and as Senator Devlin said, we're trying to use those less and less, but there may be key moments and times over where maybe our GO bonds or our revenue bond programs really wouldn't fit. And then lastly, we are the pass-through agency on the conduit revenue bonds for nonprofits, small businesses, and multifamily housing. This is a snapshot of our overall state debt over the last decade. And it lists the major ones that the state's responsible for. We left off conduit revenue bonds. And as you can see, we've gone up and we've gone slightly down. But in general, we've stayed right around the $10 billion mark over the last decade. New debt is being issued, old debt is being paid off, and we're staying within overall prudent limits. The growth has been primarily in GO bonds. We haven't paid off all that much in the pension bonds, which are a form of GO, and in the area of direct revenue bonds for ODOT. This just shows you the GO bonds within that category. You can see that those general purpose Q bonds that were mentioned, which have replaced our COP program, have probably been the biggest source of growth in GO bonds. But we're borrowing at much lower interest costs, and we refinanced a lot of our COPs outstanding and saved over $92 million thus far in terms of interest costs and for the life of those bonds. This is our revenue bond picture. It bumped up a bit, as I mentioned, in the earlier parts of this past decade to pay for ODOT projects as well as lottery revenue bonds. And it's leveled off and slightly decreased in the last few years. Again, this is a shot of our appropriation bonds, and you can see that we peaked in 2010 before we passed our constitutional amendment for Article 11Q. And it's declined down to about as low as it's going to get till it's paid off, because we have some correctional facility COPs where the beneficiaries were local governments. And Q bonds can only be used for projects where it's either owned or operated by the state. So we'll have to leave those bonds. We can refund them, but we'd have to refund them as COPs. We couldn't refund them into Qs. I was asked to show you our current credit ratings. Earlier this winter, we had the three rating agencies, national agencies, out to Oregon. And wouldn't you know it, I
picked the date back in November, and it was the day of the ice storm in Portland. So that was an exciting time for them all to be there with us. And it all worked out. We didn't get downgraded, even though we had quite an ice storm that night. In any case, we have very strong credit ratings across the board. Our COP, or appropriation credit ratings, are one notch below our general obligation ratings, which are considered AA+. Our lottery revenue bond program has very strong ratings as well because we have a lot of coverage. We don't pledge one-to-one revenue. We have a 4x coverage requirement, which is the highest among the programs around the country that have lottery revenue streams for their bonds. And we also have very strong ratings for both our senior and subordinate lien bonds for our highway user bonds. Because of these really high credit ratings, we have very low interest rates. This just shows you, since you all came into session, we've done 6 bond sales. Many of them I worked on with DAS, but also with Department of Education, who was involved in their 11 P bonds. We also sold some bonds for ODOT under Section 11-7, which was the first time those bonds have been sold since the 70s, as far as I know. And you can kind of see on the right all the various interest rates. Some of the bonds we had a longer term. The OHSU match grant bonds, for example, I think were 25 years. But just in general, we're borrowing at well below 4% for 25 years. So that's telling you both how low interest rates are, but also our high credit ratings across the board, our fiscal discipline, our balanced budgets, our reserves. This all goes into that rate, that credit rating, and that view that the investment world has about the state of Oregon. We also show you present value versus, you know, the just total interest savings, some of our other refundings that we've done recently, including some refundings of the Article 11J bonds for the CELP program that will go to help offset some of their problems, and a fairly large, but we haven't closed it yet, deal that I worked on with Gene for the universities, of which that $25 million in PV savings, approximately $18 million is going to go to the universities, and the balance will go to the general fund. To respond, if I may, to the question that Representative Kotek made about other ways to save, we tend to be fairly conservative. So when we refund, we don't extend the term of our bonds. We don't try and do a whole lot of scooping and tossing, as they say. We could structure the refunding and push the term back of the bonds, if you will, and probably save a few million dollars every year more every time we save. But the trade-off is that means the bonds are outstanding longer. And so, again, really good credits don't typically, unless we did a few little scooping and tossing a few years ago, I'll be honest with you, for the lottery, but really good credits don't scoop and toss a lot, and or extend their terms beyond the existing terms. That's always something we could look at. We've been working the opposite direction. The rating agencies ask us, how much principal of your total portfolio did you pay down in 5 years, 10, 15, 20? And we used to have fairly long average life, if you will, of that portfolio because of our pension obligation bonds, the big two. And now we're kind of getting to the halfway point with those. And so actually now we're going to pay off 50% of our GO principal all told within 10 years. What that means is that's going to free up debt capacity for new projects a little faster. And so that's sort of part of the trade-off, which is if we're maintaining fiscal discipline, we can get some short-term savings, but then there's always a trade-off in terms of the long run.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. I do want to make one last point, which I was definitely nervous when the bond bill was passed that all the bonds were concentrated with the debt service structure that you all selected collectively, that you all, towards the 1 month of March in 2017. We were very worried that we were going to flood the market with too many different bond issues. We need to have 2 weeks separation for arbitrage purposes between them. So we sort of split it out between February and now. But I can't really say that we paid an interest rate penalty. I wish I could tell you that, but we did a pretty good job. I will say that I think that you might consider spreading it out if you have the budget resource, if only because now everybody's going to put bids out into the construction market at the same time. And I think that there may be an implication in terms of the cost of what it costs people when they open their bids, because we're flooding so many projects into the construction market at the same time. So that might just be one more thing to think about in terms of spacing it out. I know that for the schools in particular, they have a schedule. They like to get their work done in the summer months. Mm-hmm. And so initially when we approved the Article P bonds, I don't think we thought through the timing of the bond sales as much as we thought about the timing of the debt service. And we can design around that and have long first coupons to make it work budgetarily. But letting us sell more of their bonds to fit into their construction schedule, I think would be a good improvement to our program.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Those are excellent suggestions. You know, on the if you know, say we have a whole bunch of projects and we try to avoid doing the end of the biennium, you know, sale, would we, is it just a matter of like going 50-50? Is it, it sounds like it might be the type of projects. Any, you know, any kind of criteria for us when we start selecting when and if to do things, that would be helpful for us.
Through the chairs to Representative Kotek. Gene has done a great job of setting up bond council contracts with different firms, and so we are starting to combine. You can see we combined selling our Q bonds with our seismic safety bonds, but there's different bond councils, so you have that consideration. And then, for example, OHSU is going to keep track of the proceeds and pay their own rebate. Gene's managing the rebate for everybody else. And so it's these lots of little decision rules that go into how we combine and get the bang. We've been told that the larger we got, the bigger block sizes you end up with, then, you know, on the margins, we're going to get a little bit better interest rate from our buyers. But I think we just have some practical concerns about some sort of the way the state government has sort of grown up over the years. If I were to have my perfect druthers, I'd say, yeah, 50-50, but that may not work for you from a debt service perspective in terms of your own budgetary needs. I think just giving us more flexibility, that give us a six-month window and let us pick the dates rather than you must sell all the bonds in March. That is all I would ask.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Please proceed.
Thank you, sir. So when we look at the debt capacity report, we think about, we have these GO bonds, we have revenue bonds, these appropriation credits, but we care primarily about making sure that we stay within limits of what the general fund can afford to pay. And for as long as I've worked here, which has been now 13 years and for many years before I was here, the commission has always recommended to the legislature and the governor that we try and keep our annual debt service no higher than 5% of annual forecasted revenues. So we have models that take all of our existing general fund supported debt service that we keep track of. We use the OEA 10-year revenue forecast, and then we figure out basically as that debt's paying off how much new debt we could afford. So it's been a guideline. It has never been a hard and fast rule, but that's the method that we've used. We have lottery bonds, and we'll talk about those separately. I'll speak briefly about how rating agencies compare our debt to other states, both the public debt as well as the new information and work they're doing to compare our entire balance sheet, which is both our public debt as well as our pension debt, and a bit more apples to apples comparison. And then lastly, we have non-tax supported debt that's primarily supported by loans and revenue streams based around those loans. So for general fund, this is the current list of what we consider to be general fund supported. As you can see, for a variety of the bonding programs, we're using percentages because a lot of it is self-supporting, but some of it isn't. The biggest single GO bond we have is our pension bonds, which are still in the $1.8 billion. But when we run payroll reports, only a third of that debt service is really being paid by the general fund. Two-thirds is being paid by ODOT, OHA, universities, and a variety of other groups. And so that's how why it's only a 32% number. So overall, the general fund supported portion of our debt service is $2.83 million. Now, this is a calculation we do all the time. And so obviously, when you build 5% rules of thumb, putting things in statute, it may be a little tricky and challenging if we were to go that route, only because it's all built around my assumptions, basically working with various state agencies. But we've stayed, as I said, within those limits for a very long time. In the model, we assumed that all the bonds that legislature approved that were general fund supported will be sold between now and the end of the biennium. We have spent years trying to figure out what the interest rates are going to be, and I've given up all hope because I'm always wrong. So we're going to go with 4.5%, which is well above the number that I showed you a little while ago, for 20-year bonds, which is super conservative. And we'll keep it there unless rates go above that 4.5% number, just to keep it more consistent every year. The model shows that we're going to end this fiscal year, because most of the debt I just sold will be actually not pay debt service till next fiscal year. So we're going to end the year at a debt service ratio, general fund, of 3.4%. And then if you let the model just say, okay, go up to 5% every year, you can see we have a huge pop in the next fiscal year, and then it adjusts lower in the years thereafter. But the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission doesn't think that's the smartest way to go. They prefer to average that debt capacity. So we took that balance of 10 years that was from the forecast, and we just divide by 4. And what you get is the amount that we have for the balance of the forecast period, and we just divide by 4 biennium, and that's how we come to the $1.14 billion per biennium number. That's not a hard and fast rule, but it, at least it gives some guideposts so that we can plan for projects in the coming biennium as well as in the next 3 beyond that, because most capital projects often take more than 1 or 2 years to complete. We also do sensitivity analysis, as you can see on the chart. If general fund forecasts drop over that 10-year forecast period, if they increase, if interest rates move around, generally the interest rate forecast doesn't have as big an impact on our overall debt ratios as obviously revenue. So being conservative and not using up all your debt capacity is always a wise move, because if revenues drop, then you know, you're still able to fund capital projects in the out years. And I think we got a lot of credit when we did have that drop several years ago and we backed off on some bonding programs. Obviously, the projects eventually got done, maybe a few years later than anticipated, but we do get strong marks for financial management, and the fact is that we are willing to make mid-course adjustments. As we take care of our infrastructure. Any questions on general fund?
Questions? Please proceed.
Okay. So lottery back debt, as you all know, funds all kinds of things. It has a lot of flexibility. It can be used for economic development, for environmental issues, for education. And we have about $1.8 billion that was outstanding at the end of the fiscal year. We've just sold a couple hundred million of new money. That number will obviously change. But it funds all different kinds of great things. We use both taxable and tax-exempt, depending on the nature of the project. We tend to put the taxable bonds on the short end of the yield curve to keep the interest rate down, and then wrap the back end with the tax-exempt bonds to keep the blended cost of funds as low as possible. So we assume, for the model, that all the bonds that were authorized by the legislature were sold. We use the same interest rate, the same methodology of using the same 10-year lottery forecast from OEA. And in this case, we said 20-year debt, and we don't want to use up more than 25%, which is what 4x coverage means, of the lottery revenue that is forecast to be available. This is sort of an important picture. As you probably painfully all know, there's been large drops in the lottery revenue forecast, the long-term forecast, over the last several years. The picture on that shows the red was where we were when we did the report in 2015. And that little circle just shows you when we were doing the video lottery replacement program. And of course, it had been much higher before, and we had lower expectations. So the blue line was where we thought we were in January of 16, and the yellow shows you what we think now. So what you're seeing is we've had a little bit more of a pop than we dreamed that we were going to have, which is great, which has improved our coverage, made it, you know, all that much easier when we got a rating review. But OEA is now forecasting the impact of the Le Centre Casino on long-term revenues. So that's all been taken into account in terms of doing this long-term revenue forecast and then borrowing forecast. This shows that we're ending the year. Again, we sold lottery bonds. The debt service is next year. It kicks in. We're at 5.6 coverage, which means we have less than 20% of our lottery revenues now dedicated to paying debt service. Again, the same assumption, 4x coverage across the board. And you can see that over the next 8 years in the forecast period, a little over $800 million in capacity. So we, again, average it out, saying let's not use it up all right away, revenues might drop, and that averaging approach gets us to $209 million per biennium.
Lottery revenues
Any other questions about lottery?
Any questions about lottery?
Cool.
Proceed.
So net tax supported debt, as I mentioned, is a way for the rating agencies to try and compare 50 different states, 50 different constitutions, and just say, okay, if you have this stream of revenue in your control, we're going to count all the debt that's tied to all those different streams and call it net tax supported debt. So what they did, besides our general fund debt, is they added in all our pension bonds, regardless of who's really paying the debt service back, our COPs, our Qs, our lottery revenue bonds, and our highway user bonds. Fought voraciously to try and keep it out, said we have constitutional set aside, can't touch it. So they said, we don't care. But that's the only way to really compare us to Washington, California, and all the other states. So that's all what goes into the number. And this just shows you where we were based on their methodologies. We've projected an increase from this fiscal year, last fiscal year now, of an increase of about $800 million. And you can see the net per capita. We do it both with and without the pension bonds, because a lot of states chose not to do pension bonds, but that doesn't mean that they don't have large amounts of unfunded liability. And so what people are realizing is, and I can show you the Moody's, Moody's medians historically have only shown you public debt. So in the little green bars, that shows you the Moody's medians for 50 states in terms of these ratios. And I chose the debt as a percentage of personal income, but they also have one for per capita. And we're way above it. So on our layer of our cake, we wouldn't be above it if they didn't include the ODOT bonds. Okay, so I lost that battle, but we have infrastructure needs and we're taking care of them. But then the pension bonds sit on top of that. And again, you might argue, is it good, was it bad? But all things being equal, it pushes our net tax supported debt ratios to 11th, 12th, 13th highest among states. But again, there's many states that have pension liabilities that just they haven't bonded for. And then we chose to do that back in 2003. So Standard & Poor's is trying to go a different route. It's not a perfect chart, I apologize, but what they're trying to do is take the CAFRs from 50 states, and we now report the net pension liability in annual financial reports. So the different colors, and I'm sorry it's a little hard to see, is they have the public debt of each of the communities, and they have a state, that's the debt per capita, that's their yellow. They have their OPEB liability, which is the dark blue, which is the other benefits, health benefits, personnel benefits. And then they have the state NPL per capita, which is the light blue on the bottom, and that's what's reported in CAFRs. And we look pretty good until Gene pointed out to me that our CAFR is 1 year behind, even though these numbers were reported and we don't have the Morrow decision in those numbers. That's probably going to bump our numbers by about $1,000 per capita. But having said that, it's definitely not going to put us in the same universe with Connecticut and New Jersey. But what it does reveal to you is that there's a lot more on a balance sheet than just public debt. And so, we'll continue to report to you the new numbers as they come. But I think that's the way to think about it, is you can do pension bonds or you can have unfunded liability. At the end of the day, we don't have a lot of OPEB debt, which is sort of our saving grace. But debt is debt.
Mr. Chairman, there was just a comment. On the pension pension obligation bonds, they were issued in a couple of odd ways. One is that they are not refundable. Two is that they assumed a growing workforce for the state. But the other thing, going back to the speaker's comment about 2025, I think we're due to pay them off in about 2027.
That's correct. Which is why we're finally getting to the 50% of GO bonds being paid off, if I may, through the chair to Senator Devlin. I wasn't here when those were sold. And I have sold them in other places, I'll be honest with you. But when we sold them, we took sort of a principal holiday, and we had almost no principal paid in the first 5 years, which provided debt service relief. As I talk about, you can pay me now, you can pay me later. So we sold a little over $2 billion. We paid virtually no principal for 5 years. And we have upward amortizing principal, which means that we were assuming that we were trying to mirror what the PERS rates were going to grow. 13 years into that sale, we still have $1.8 billion of $2 billion of POB still outstanding. Those bonds were sold taxably because they can't be sold tax exempt. They were sold with no ability to call the bonds, because back then there weren't a lot of muni bonds that were taxable. I fight really hard for call features, because we could have saved a fortune, just an enormous amount of money if we had fought hard. We would have paid more in the first place to have that call feature. And again, if the idea was debt service budget relief, you know, it's a push-pull in terms of those kinds of trade-offs. But they will be paid in full in 2027.
Not that long.
Any other questions about our debt ratios?
Please proceed.
Thank you, sir. So these are the non-tax-supported debt programs. On occasion, as I mentioned, we've tried through the commission report to highlight issues that we thought were very important. The goal of non-tax-supported debt is to keep that word non-tax-supported in front of it, so that the general fund is not ever in a position that it has to come out of pocket to bail out a bond program. And obviously, with the SELP loan program, we've been ringing the clarion bell for several years that was probably going to occur in a few years. Now, the refunding helps, but it won't be some sufficient. And I think you probably know enough about it to say. So that's really all I have to say today. In conclusion, we seem to have a fair amount of debt capacity, both for the next biennium as well as into the immediate future, to plan for our highest need capital needs. Our credit rating is strong. We grab and take every advantage of every refunding that we can. And we have a very good reputation at this point in the bond market. So with that, thank you very much for your time.
Any questions for this witness? Chair Holt.
Yeah, I was going to try not to ask any questions, so as to ignore anybody. But curious about the SELP program, and I know the recommendation is not to make any loans from that loan program in the future. It doesn't say for how long. And when looking at that program, there's a current proposal to move that program to Business Oregon, where they actually have the expertise to manage portfolios of loans, more so than the Department of Energy really never had that expertise. And, you know, which may be proper risk analysis of a few very large loans caused a big problem, whereas the rest of the loan portfolio for many, many years was actually doing quite well and returning, you know, on our investment. And so given that, does, you know, if, I mean, if we were to isolate those bad loans, wouldn't it make sense to, when the markets are correct, to maybe start that loan program back up again to help that revenue stream to pay down that debt a little bit faster?
Through the chairs, Representative Poley, we wholeheartedly, both Treasury, me personally, the Commission support that legislation. I agree that Business Oregon has a lot more financial savvy. The tricky part will be, when the program was started in the 80s, there wasn't as much access to capital for energy efficiency, let alone alternative energy. And the program basically charged a spread between our real borrowing costs and then whatever the risk-adjusted rate that they charged. And there was many private loans that they made that were perfectly fine. The challenge will be, if we don't want to make those kind of loans where we can have a good spread to help restore our reserves, if we're loaning to governments that could go out and borrow it themselves, their pushback's going to be they could do it themselves. And so we won't be able to earn quite as large a spreads. So it's going to be a slow, I don't think it's a bad idea, but I think it's going to be a bit of a slow growth to restore the reserves that built up over 20 years, because they kind of got sucked, they're going to be sucked down for those big loans that you talked about. I don't know if that answers your question, but I think being realistic, when you avoid risky loans, you're not going to be able to charge a large spread, because the school district can go borrow it themselves. You know, it's just hard to figure out exactly who their new customer is going to be.
Just one
follow-up. Yeah,
I appreciate that, but I guess I would. My question would be, do you see that market? I guess of having cheaper loans out there, perhaps you know, monitoring that market, because that may not always stay the same. And at that point, it may make more sense to start that program back up.
Through the chair, I think if that opportunity arises, if small businesses, school districts, and other people don't have access to capital, it would be great. We can crank up the borrowing to help them grow it. But I think being realistic that there's many more choices than maybe there were for folks in the 80s in the kinds of markets that we were able to help. It just might be harder than it used to be. I mean, it's a good problem to have, which is that everybody has access to capital. And I don't know if that was the case in the 80s and 90s.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, I guess we go to DAS Capital Finance presentation. Gene, take us home. I think she's got some technical. There we go.
Thank you yesterday for being the software. Thanks for coming. It's okay.
I was going to give you flack for not personally inviting you.
I really thank you for being there. That showed me the support. You know, I don't know why I made you chair this damn subject. You've done nothing to make me feel better about my life. Jesus.
Not like me. I've helped you every day.
I better believe it. You've helped me all right into a state of...
You're the one that gave me the hemorrhoids.
You should take me to state of therapy.
Co-Chair Gerard, Co-Chair Holby, members of the committee. I'm Jean Gabriel, the Capital Finance Manager with the Department of Administrative Services. I'm here to cover briefly the bond finance projects that were included in the governor's budget, which are in the 2017 bond bill, Senate Bill 5505, as introduced. At a high level, the governor's budget makes capital investments in four primary areas: campus improvements at public universities and community college, seismic upgrades for schools and emergency services buildings, capital improvements for school districts across the state, and facility improvements for various state agencies. As Laura noted, the recommended level of new debt issuance for general fund supported bonds is $1.14 billion for the 17-19 biennium. The governor's budget proposes $968.9 million of new bond issuance, so about $170 million of capacity remains. For lottery revenue bonds, the recommended capacity is $209.4 million. Since the debt capacity model assumes all debt that was authorized will be issued, and since there was $11.7 million of bonds that will not be issued in 15-17, this amount was added back to capacity. So the governor's budget proposed $219.9 million of new bond issuance, nearly all of the $221.1 million that was available for debt capacity. And I will show you a list of the lottery bond projects a little bit later in the presentation. So this chart shows the $969.9 million of general fund supported bonds represented by program area. As you can see, investments in the education program area are the largest. They're about half, 52% of the total. The next largest program area at 27% is economic and community development, followed by 14% for public safety. As you know, the governor's budget does not make recommendations for non-executive branch agencies, so the requests for county courthouse projects funded through the Oregon Judicial Department are not included in the governor's budget. In the education program area, the largest investment is $274 million for capital improvements at public university campuses. As I'll show you on a later slide, each of the seven public universities has at least one project financed with bond proceeds that are provided as grants through the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. Grants made using Article 11G bonds are required to be matched with funds from the universities, so we stretch the state's general fund capacity a little farther when 11G bonds are used instead of 11Q bonds. Article 11Q bonds, as Laura mentioned, are the primary vehicle used to finance the state's real or personal property. It has to be owned or operated by the state. Community college projects total $103 million, and these are funded as matching grants through the HEC. The 11P program provides matching grants to school districts for capital costs. This program was first funded in 15-17 with $126 million of authority. The governor's budget recommends an additional $120 million for 17-19. The Department of Education has seen tremendous demand for grant monies. The program is designed to provide incentive to school districts to pass their own bond levies and begin addressing the significant needs across the state. ODE also has $9 million project to make capital improvements at the Oregon School for the Deaf, including new roofing, windows, insulation, lighting, and some ADA improvements. In the area of economic and community development, the governor's budget recommends funding seismic rehabilitation grant programs at levels that are comparable to what was authorized in 15-17. $162 million would fund seismic upgrades for schools through the 11M program, and an additional $40 million would fund updates to emergency things like fire stations through 11N bonds. Bond proceeds would fund grants for eligible projects through a grant program that's administered by the Oregon Business Development Department. Given predictions for a large seismic event being inevitable, these investments are considered a high priority. Another area of focus in the governor's budget is affordable housing, given the current shortage of available housing that's affordable to lower-income citizens. $60.8 million of Article 11 Q bonds is being proposed to fund the Local Innovation and Fast Track, or the LIFT housing program that's managed by Oregon Housing and Community Services. This is a relatively new program, first funded with $40 million of Q bond proceeds in 15-17. Under the current design of the LIFT program, the state does not own the actual housing property, but is taking an operational interest in the property in order to meet the constitutional requirement for 11 Q bonds to be owned or operated by the state. And then there's also $2.5 million of Q bonds for renovations at the Dalles Veterans Home and a parking lot at the Veterans Home in Lebanon. Three agencies in the public safety area have a significant number of facilities throughout the state: Oregon Youth Authority, Department of Corrections, and Oregon Military Department. The governor's budget recommends funding multiple projects to address deferred maintenance and make capital improvements that will preserve these aging facilities at these three agencies. In addition, $15.5 million of bonds is included to continue the implementation of the child enforcement system, which has been ongoing for several years. This project is expected to be completed in 2021, so this funding would just continue the implementation of that IT system. In the natural resource program area, $10 million is proposed for deferred maintenance at the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife facilities. An additional $10 million is for cleanup of contaminated site under DEQ's Pollution Control Bond Program. DEQ also has a project funded with 11 Q bonds to develop and implement an environmental data management system, which would be used to manage data and convert their permitting to an electronic method through a web-based application. And the Department of Forestry has a couple of projects, one to renovate their main office building and another to replace a facility in Toledo, which is a joint project with ODOT. There's also $18 million of coupons for DHS to continue implementing its integrated eligibility determination system, which was first funded in the 2016 session with $7.6 million of bond authority. This project is designed to integrate eligibility of several programs, including TANF, SNAP, and other non-MAGI systems into one system. And a couple of other IT systems being funded with bonds are the Department of Revenue's Core Tax System Replacement Project, which is now in its third phase, and the Property Valuation System, which is an off-the-shelf computer-assisted mass appraisal system. Both of these projects were funded in part in 15-17, so this additional funding would just continue the ongoing implementation. So the chart, the slides so far then have been a look at the $968 million of general fund supported bonds by program area. On this slide, what I've done is extracted only the state facility projects just to kind of give you a list of those individually and show you them sort of as a snapshot. So we have a total of $130.9 million, and they're all funded with 11Q bonds. The Regional Armory Emergency Enhancement Project, this will make structural improvements on several facilities. The Oregon Military will also complete renovations at the Jackson Armory and the Grants Pass Armory. We have $31.8 million for DOC to work on 16 different facilities to try to improve some of those facilities, including electrical systems, water systems, roofs, HVAC, surveillance, fire system, and infrastructure improvements at all of their facilities. We have $11.2 million that will finance OIA facility improvements in living units at the Rogue Valley Youth Correctional Facility. OIA will also renovate 7 West Cottages at its McLaren facility. The OIA capital improvements project of $17.4 million will focus on the needs that were identified through the facilities condition assessment. And the other projects on the slide I've already mentioned individually. So in total, again, it's $131 million, focusing on improvements to preserve the state's facilities. So next we have a list of the IT systems. I did already talk about these systems, but again, I thought you might like a snapshot that kind of gathers them all together on one slide, totaling $66.8 million, all being financed with 11Q bonds. So now I'm going to switch gears and talk about the programs or projects that are financed with bonds not being repaid by the general fund.
Excuse me.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gene, I'm sorry. Can I go back up to the $32 million capital construction for DOC? I'm familiar with in 15 when we had the facilities report from OIA, and I know some of the OIA is related to their kind of long-term strategic plan for their facilities. Is there a similar document for DOC, or is that mostly deferred maintenance? I mean, I'm just wondering, is there somewhere we can see the intentionality around all the, or is it just really just deferred maintenance? Or
Co-Chair Durrott, Co-Chair Holby, Representative Kotek, I'm not sure where the source of information is that they provided in their request. I know the purposes for which they want to use it, but I'm not sure whether they consider that all deferred maintenance or whether it was actually a result of their facilities condition assessment. I know they did have an assessment, okay. So that's something I can follow up on and get for you to find out whether or not that $31.8 million request was a result of their facilities condition assessment.
That would be great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Please continue.
Thank you. So again, we're switching gears here. We're moving on to the programs that are funded with dedicated funds, not by the general fund. The debt service is supported by various dedicated funds. First of all, we have $120 million of authority being proposed for the Department of Veterans Affairs to provide farm and home loans to veterans. The bonds are repaid with loan repayments from borrowers. There are 5 projects for public universities that are proposed to be funded with 11F bonds, and I'll show you a list of those projects in just a minute. The bond proceeds would be loaned to the universities, and the loan repayments would be used by the state to pay debt service on the bonds. We also have $25 million of authority being proposed to finance multifamily housing for elderly, low-income, and disabled citizens. This program is managed by Oregon Housing and Community Services, and the debt is self-supporting from project revenues. In addition to the $10 million of pollution control bonds that were general fund supported, which I mentioned earlier, there is also another $10 million of self-supporting bonds for DEQ's Clean Water State Revolving Fund. And for the 2 Department of Forestry projects that I mentioned earlier, a portion of those projects is being financed with Q bonds that are expected to be repaid with other funds, not general funds. And so the office building renovation is split funded 50-50, 50% other funds, 50% general fund. And the Toledo facility replacement is about 58% other funds and 42% general fund debt service. So this is why you'll see in the bond bill, the Q bonds are actually authorized in two different places. We have $411.8 million that's general fund supported, and then we have a small portion, $2.6 million, that's supported by other funds, and that is represented by these two projects here for ODF. For university projects, there are three different types of bonds that can be requested by the universities. And the reason why I mention this is because these options affect the state's debt capacity in different ways. With 11Q bonds, the proceeds are grants to the universities, and the debt service is paid 100% by the state with general fund dollars. With 11G bond proceeds, there are also grants that the universities don't have to repay, but the Constitution requires matching funds to be contributed by the university. So both 11Q and 11G bonds use general fund debt capacity. But if we first take an example, if we funded a $50 million project completely with 11Q bonds, the entire $50 million would count against capacity. If instead the $50 million project were funded with $25 million in 11G bonds and $25 million matching funds from the university, this would use only $25 million of capacity. With 11F bonds, the proceeds are loaned to the university and the state's debt service is paid with loan repayments from the university. So if we had a $50 million project funded with 11F bonds, it would not count against general fund capacity at all. So Article 11F bonds have historically funded the self-sustaining projects, typically student housing, parking structures, sports venues, and other self-sustaining facilities. So here's a list of the university projects that are in the governor's budget. Many of the projects are financed with multiple sources, meaning, as you can see along the top, 11F, 11G, 11Q, some of the projects are financed by different types of bonds. So as you can imagine, if I were looking at it from a university perspective, I think it's reasonable that I would be really happy to have 11Q bonds because it's a grant and there's no matching requirement. Next best would be the 11G bonds because it's a grant, but the university does have to provide matching funds from its own resources. And most likely the least desired method, the 11F bonds, which are a loan that has to be repaid with university revenues. So when we reviewed the request for university projects, consideration was given to the mix of funding as well as the impact that that mix of funding had on general fund capacity, along with equitable treatment in making sure that each university had at least one project. So in total, the governor's budget proposes funding $349.8 million of university project costs. So the amounts on this table are the project costs, the amounts that would actually be used for the project. They're not the amount that comes in the bond bill because the bond bill includes the state's cost to issue the bonds. In addition to the university-specific projects, there is one project that is for multiple universities. That's the first one on the list there, $45.7 million for capital improvement and renewal at all seven of the universities, which will be allocated by among the various universities. This funding would be used for deferred maintenance, ADA enhancements, and other capital improvements. So going down the list here, Eastern Oregon University has three projects. The IT equipment facility project is for improvements to electrical systems, HVAC systems, and an emergency backup power generator. Losso Hall renovation phase one is for accessibility improvements, replacing HVAC systems and controls, and energy efficiency upgrades to lighting systems. And the third project is to restore EOU's track and field facilities funded with 11F bonds to be repaid by university revenues. The OIT Center for Excellence in Engineering Technology is being funded with a combination of 11G bonds, which will then be matched with $4 million from OIT, and with Q bonds. This is to continue the renovation of Cornett Hall, which was initially funded in 15-17, and to begin construction of a new 90,000 square foot facility. The other OIT project is for a student recreation center to be funded with 11F bonds that would be repaid with university revenues. OSU has five projects. The Cascade Expansion campus infrastructure would finance roadways, pathways, parking, stormwater facilities, utilities, and public infrastructure improvements. The site reclamation portion of that project is primarily for the partial fill and compaction of a pumice mine. The OSU Cordley Hall renovation, phase one, is to replace mechanical and electrical systems, upgrade fire and life safety systems, renovate classrooms, and make some accessibility improvements. All three of those projects are proposed to be funded with Q-bonds, so 100% grant, with no required match from the university. Gilkey Hall renovation is for updates to accessibility, fire and life safety, plumbing, electrical, and mechanical systems. And the Food and Beverage Center is proposed to be funded with $9 million of 11 G-bonds, which means an additional $9 million from OSU for the contribution of the match. PSU has three projects, all to be funded as loans repaid by PSU, with the exception of $40.5 million of 11 G-bonds for the Graduate School of Education. The University Center building land purchase, this may sound familiar to you because it was originally authorized in 1315 and was reauthorized in 1517, but the bonds still have not been issued for this purchase, and so PSU has requested a reauthorization of the $10 million that was authorized in 1517 plus an additional $5 million for a total of $15 million. For SOU, $6 million of Q-bonds would finance deferred maintenance in Central Hall for replacing HVAC and electrical systems, some ADA compliance, and seismic stabilization and other structural improvements. The University of Oregon would use donated funds for its match for 11 G-bonds to construct a new campus for accelerating scientific impact, which I'm sure you've heard about. UO also has a project funded with a combination of 11G and 11Q bonds for a new 105,000 square foot classroom and faculty office building. And Western Oregon would renovate the Oregon Military Building with primarily Q bonds. Renovations would include architectural changes and some structural modifications, additional seismic bracing, and upgrades to electrical service. So here are the projects that would be funded for community colleges, which total nearly $101 million. Four of the projects you can see are labeled carryover, which means these projects were authorized in 1517, but at the time that the governor's budget was developed, it was thought that these four colleges would not have their required match. So they were included in the bond bill to reauthorize them in 1719. The four colleges are Columbia Gorge, Mount Hood, Southwestern Oregon, and Treasure Valley Community College. However, since that time, Southwestern Oregon was able to provide its matching funds, and so their health and science building project was included in the recent 11G bond issuance. So this carryover is no longer needed. And I did want to mention that the carryover projects do not count against capacity because they were already counted. I also wanted to mention, in full disclosure, that the bond bill includes a notwithstanding clause, which was needed to authorize more than one project for Mount Hood Community College and also for Southwestern, but obviously that's no longer needed. So as you may recall, Oregon Laws 2013, Chapter 705, specifies that a community college may not have more than one project approved for funding with 11G bonds that is awaiting matching funds. Mount Hood requested a second project, the Maywood Park Center, in addition to the previously authorized Technology Innovation Center. So in order to include both of these projects in the bond bill, a notwithstanding clause was included.
Do it all the time. We revise it all the time.
In terms of direct revenue bonds, $300 million of revenue bond authority is proposed for the Housing and Community Services Department to finance single-family mortgage loans and multifamily housing projects. Revenues pledged for repayment are rental income, mortgage payments, and fees. Business Development Department administers the Oregon Bond Bank. $30 million is proposed to provide loans to municipalities for water and wastewater projects. And $219.9 million of lottery revenue bond authority in the bill would fund nine different projects around the state. And here are those nine different projects. These would invest in things like water infrastructure, regional solutions, and affordable housing, very similar to what we've been investing in over the last several years. The largest single project is Connect Oregon 7 at $77.9 million, and this would continue progress being made to improve Oregon's ports, public transportation, bike and pedestrian paths, and the rail network. Also included is $11.2 million for taking the initial steps towards cleanup of the Portland Harbor. This would fund sampling and testing in order to determine the levels of contamination, sort of as a first step to that cleanup project. And there's also $16.5 million for campus safety and security, which would be at both the community colleges as well as at the universities. The pass-through revenue bond authorizations in the bond bill are for the same four programs for which authority was granted last biennium. Oregon puts its name on the debt, and because of that, the conduit borrower benefits by enjoying tax-exempt rates. But as Laura mentioned, these bonds are not a liability of the state, and no state revenues are pledged to repay the bonds. An example of one of these is the Oregon Facilities Authority, which issues bonds to finance the acquisition or construction of facilities related to health, housing, and educational uses. And lastly, on the bottom of the slide, there is $10 million of authority for other financing agreements. And what this is for is an estimate of the needs for the state to enter into capital leases, which are considered other financing agreements, a form of debt. And that's the estimate of what we need for the biennium. It's primarily for the DAS Enterprise Technology Services for their capital leases for IT-related equipment, but there's a little bit extra as well for needs that may come up during the biennium. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Anybody have any questions at all? I think we're good. Thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
So let me get this right. The governor has asked for almost all the bond money. Is that pretty much the case?
Co-Chair Gerard, Co-Chair Holby, Senator Courtney, there is approximately $170 million of general fund debt capacity that is not included in the governor's budget.
Out of the $1.35 billion.
Yeah. Out of $1.14 billion, there's $968.9 million proposed, leaving about $173 or so million.
Are the courthouses in there?
They are not.
Is the Elliott in there?
Is the Elliott State Forest in there?
No, it is not.
Is the $100 million this U of O wants to match the great Knight money in there?
A portion of it is. Oh. It's not fully in there, no.
Well, it's not fair to say this to you, but you might say we might do some rearranging because probably some legislators have some things they are interested in, too. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but I'm not trying to ruin your weekend, but you can. I just think that's the case. I don't know. Because we got these other things people want, so I don't know what else to say about that. But I just, I was hoping you'd leave me a couple pennies, but geez, I don't know. I'm not feeling very good right now.
You should ask for how much is left in lottery bonds.
Senator Devlin?
Well, I was just going to ask, what is the judicial branch request?
Co-Chair Gerard, Co-Chair Holby, Senator Devlin, my recollection is that it is about $137 million. I'd have to double check on that.
Okay.
That's not courthouse money, though, right?
No, that is a courthouse.
Oh, that's the courthouse. Is that one courthouse or two courthouses?
It's multiple courthouses. I know the Multnomah County itself was $100 million, and then I believe the other smaller courthouses totaled $37 million for a total of $137.
$137, and your previous figure was, the amount left not obligated was?
$173 million.
Okay, so $137 minus from $170, so she left you $33 million.
Senator Devlin, if I could add that in the course of determining the capacity as adjusted for carry forward, there are some changes that Amanda will be taking into consideration and will be discussing with the committee. So while these numbers were like a snapshot in time, things have evolved since that time, and there may in fact be additional capacity available for bonds that were thought to at the time to be issued during the biennium, but in fact were not issued. So there may be a little bit more wiggle room there.
Okay. President Courtney?
How much money is in there for the transportation plan that we're going to pass?
Co-chair Gerard, co-chair Holby, Senator Courtney, the transportation package is not reflected in the governor's budget.
Okay. Any other comments? I would like to make one comment, and that is, historically, we have tried really hard to keep politics out of both the HEC and the community college's budget, and I really did not appreciate the governor rearranging what the presidents came out with initially on for the higher education budget. We want to keep politics out of it. It just makes our job a lot easier. So I'd appreciate it if you take that message back. Any other questions?
What are you?
So I shouldn't have probably said that. Speaker Kotek.
No, it's, Mr. Chair, I have to just say that giving every campus a project is already innately political. So that's not based on whether or not they're always the best projects. But just for those who are watching, and just to be clear, and I don't think our co-chairs have maybe mapped this all out yet, but we will see folks from the different branches, the different agencies coming in on their various, for example, on the regional solutions somewhere, whatever is the right day, we will get a report on the regional solutions projects related to the $12.3 million, et cetera. I just want to make sure that's okay. It's my assumption from last time, but thank you. And we'll have a day on higher ed. We'll have a day on all kinds of things.
Okay. Patrick, I guess you have something you want to say as well?
Not at this time. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Are we finished? Colleagues, I'm going to close the informational meeting, and I'm going to adjourn today.
Mr. Chair.
And I'm going to adjourn today.